Another great weekend that brings us another great conversation. This is Living Entrepreneurship by Salty. We almost forgot to mention that this is a school of entrepreneurship, or it's a school of business.
Yeah.
So it's not written in sand. Our conversations here is things that we learn on an everyday basis and some of our experiences. Well, for starters, my name is Jesse, the African Son, and I'm here with Mr. Ephraim Rwamwenge. How are you doing, my brother?
I'm blessed, as always. I feel, there's somebody I met the other day, and I'm repeating this. I feel like I sound like a broken record. But again, I met somebody, and I'm like, they're like, how are you? And before I could finish, they're like, and you're blessed. And I'm like, you standard operating procedure.
I don't know if it's the same for everyone. You know, in my journey doing business, I feel like I don't know if I'm using the right tactics. Sometimes I wonder if I'm working with the right people. Sometimes I even wonder if I have enough resources to sustain me through even for the rainy days of the business. Sometimes it's really very scary. And maybe through this conversation, I could have a learning from you and where I sit with these thoughts. You know, last week when you mentioned that you are not an entrepreneur, you are an employee. I got some feedback about so many people who felt scared that maybe what actually is being said is I'm just a wannabe entrepreneur, not real entrepreneur, because maybe my approach is completely so off and I need to unlearn and learn. But maybe just to settle this, when you said you're not an entrepreneur, you are an employee, what is that you're trying to allude to, Ephraim?
When most people pursue entrepreneurship, at least when research has shown, majority of them are pursuing freedom. But based on the conversation we had last week, if you find yourself in a situation where you are paying and are committed to something that denies you a certain level of freedom, which in this context was debt, or at least unhealthy amounts of debt or unhealthy types of debt, you stop being free by definition of, and so you stop being an entrepreneur by that definition of being free. And so you now end up becoming employed by the definition of an employee creates more value for the employer than they do for themselves. And I think that for me was what I was trying to communicate. And I think normally when you're close to the truth, especially a painful truth, that's when you get the most extreme reaction. And I think I didn't expect the reaction to be people being so convicted, because I think that's the word. A lot of people are convicted so much. People sent me private messages and they're like, man, this is me. And I can feel the weight of my situation on me. What do you suggest I do to break free? And I mean, it's not one size fits all for solutions. Again, first of all, you need to look at how you found yourself at that point to figure out, and also where you are as of today to figure out how you're going to get yourself out of it. Because are those who can snap out of the debt cycle immediately, are those it takes a little bit more time because of the extent to which they're in that mess and the current obligations they have that are linked to that debt. So for me, I really genuinely wanted people to just understand, like, are you working for yourself or are you going to commit yourself to work for somebody else? Whose interests are you looking out for? Yours or the bank's? And again, when I say banks, I'm using banks as a word to encompass the entire lending fraternity, right? And this is not to tell people not to borrow money. It's important we borrow money. But I mean, I'm talking of it from a macroeconomic perspective, but I'm saying, do you know what you're getting yourself into? Do you understand that?
Good question. And I think I have found myself in that intersection of thoughts where, after asking myself, do I really understand what I've gotten myself into? You know, sometimes you put in both of your feet and then you start to slide. And like, how far am I willing to take the slide? Or should I find an escape route immediately so I do not slide further? into this which I started. So I find myself asking a couple of friends, what opportunities could be available?
Mm.
And I don't know what you think about this from an entrepreneur who is with some experience to start asking people what opportunities could be available that someone can venture in. Is it even a thing for entrepreneurs to ask others what opportunities could be available that I could, maybe put in my small money and earn something out of it?
There's a saying, actually, it's today, I was listening to a podcast, and they repeated a saying that I think we've heard so many times, but I think in line to what we're about to talk about today, I think it's perfect. It says that whatever doesn't grow dies.
Hmm.
And what that simply means is that if you are not developing yourself, your mind, your capacity, your business, you're not looking for new ways to do things, you're not pursuing innovation, you're not on this continuous improvement journey, there's a way that it's regressive. There's regression in the sense that instead of progression, there's regression. You're instead of moving forward, you're moving backwards, right? And eventually, if you're moving backwards, if you're at 10 and we now start to count backwards, decreasing, eventually we get to zero, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you started off with 100K in your pocket and you keep chopping that money, at some point you're going to get to zero. If you're lucky and somebody's willing to loan you money, you even go to negatives, right? And the same thing applies when it comes to business. I would be shocked if a seasoned entrepreneur said, I'm happy with where we are. I think it's enough. And that could mean many things. That could be, I'm happy with where our business is with the existing number of clients we have, and I don't think we need to add any more. Or it could be, I'm happy with the kind of work that we're doing. I don't see us needing to do anything new. Or it could be, I'm happy with the markets we're in. I don't see us needing to go into new markets. Now, again, everybody has an agenda of why they're in business. But at the end of the day, what does not grow will eventually disappear and dissipate. And so what I've normally noticed is if you look at times past and history, and I've said this many times on many other episodes and even on Kigali in the Morning, that human nature repeats itself.
Mm-hmm.
People, there's nothing new under the sun, not because there's nothing new under the sun, but because people are the same yesterday, today, and forever in terms of how they go about their lives, right? There's just these fundamental aspects that are just same across generations and across times, and these patterns repeat themselves, right? The same thing applies even when it comes to business, right? You'll see hubris, which is success, normally breeds complacency. So let me put it in simpler language, right? Success allows laziness and almost half a haphazard way of doing life, like you're not committed. That's what it leads to. Why? Because you believe that, why should I fix what's not broken? And so what I'm just trying to say is that for you as a seasoned entrepreneur to say, hey, I need to go, let me know what opportunities exist, that is actually the sign of somebody who has understood the cycles of life. Because what made you successful today might not make you successful tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's about survival of the fittest. It's about adaptability. When we talk of evolution and survival of species, it's the species that can adapt the fastest, the soonest, and better than the next, that actually go on to live decades, if not millions and millennia of years.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we go the route of talking about a business or a businessman, you need to let go of the identity of a particular type of businessman and just embrace the fact that you are an entrepreneur, a businessman in general. What do I mean by that? Jesse, you are not a media mogul. You're a businessman. So today you can decide you're going to be a farmer. And that's the fluidity, a rigidity, like the lack of rigidity you need to be able to thrive. Because today media is very lucrative, tomorrow it's a loss-making business. Are you going to stay in that sector just because it's your identity? Or are you going to shed that identity and reinvent yourself? And that is the number one fundamental of success in business, reinvention.
Mm-hmm.
You reinvent products, you reinvent services, you reinvent models, business models, you reinvent delivery channels, you reinvent even yourself. If you are the eccentric dude, you now become the recluse.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the talker, you become the listener. It's necessary. There's a time for laughter, there's a time for sadness, so on and so forth.
I'd like us to give an intro to our, you know, major talking points for this podcast today, where I wanted us to loop into industries or sectors. And I want maybe to ask this way, are there industries, sectors that you believe are currently experiencing the most success with their business models, and why is that so? Briefly, if we could attempt to look into this, and then maybe we'll break and later continue with the conversation.
So this is a very interesting question because, again, I think it comes back to what we've been talking about, the cyclical nature of business, right? What I've noticed... Okay, so let me track back. 2016, I think. This was October, November.
Mm-hmm.
I remember giving a keynote speech at a job summit in a country, not Rwanda, in a country, but on the African continent.
Mm.
And the question was, what's the future of entrepreneurship? That was the title they gave me, and they asked me to talk about it. So obviously... like any person who has been given such a platform, you go and do your research because you want to give people substance, right? You're not just going to be talking like whatever, you know, hot air. So I went and I did my research and something kept hitting me. They had a word for it at the time and it had not yet picked up, but it was something that even I, when I started looking at the best way to go about running my businesses, there was a particular business at the time I was trying to explore, which was birthed out of necessity, the serviced office business called Thomas Ford. It kept hitting me. It was called the shared economy or the sharing economy.
Mm-hmm.
And the logic was that there was so much excess value stuck in what we would call dead assets. And so you'd find... companies would, or human beings had so much assets. Though, I mean, there was this huge asset base that was just producing a fraction of its value because it was sitting idle. So how could we plug into that excess value and create an economy around it, right? And so that gave birth to Uber and Airbnb and WeWork and all these companies and that just... were birthed out of how do we utilize these excess resources at our disposal and decentralize asset value,
mm-hmm.
at least asset value contribution to the overall business, right? Let me give the two examples of Airbnb and Uber. So if I have a car, I'm a working professional, right? I wake up in the morning and I drive to work and I park that car outside in the parking lot of my office building. I'm going to be in office from like 9 up until 5. Lunch is probably had in the building or nearby the building. I never enter my car. So you have all this value. Let's say you bought your car 10 million francs, right? You have all this 10 million francs that's just sitting there doing nothing for the economy in general.
Mm.
These guys came up with a model and like, how can we tap into that and use that extra value that when an asset is not being utilized during what we call off-peak times, right?
Yeah.
To now plug it back into the economic productivity of our ecosystem, right? And so that's where now this sharing economy was born. Same thing with the Airbnbs of this world. I may have an apartment. Instead of relying on a traditional hotel to supply accommodation, I can also plug my residence into it. I have extra bedrooms that are just sitting idle. That was the future at the time.
Hmm.
That was 2016. And I remember I talked about it and I explained it and it made so much sense at the time. Now, when we come back to today's world, we shifted from the excess value being physical assets to now what we would call softer assets. It's still the same logic, but it's softer. And I think it's what it was brought on by COVID, and COVID really just opened up our minds to that reality that life is fleeting. You know, this isn't, it's not something that is guaranteed. And so how do we then maximize who we are as individuals, but also our environments? And so that's when the birth of remote work came up, you know, where someone can have a job and then have another job elsewhere, but they're doing it remotely or hybrid, or you find someone has a job and they have a side hustle. It's because they were looking at themselves and how can they extract more value from themselves, even if they're doing it subconsciously. They didn't know that that's exactly what they were trying to do. These soft assets have become human beings, people, the human resource. And that's the business models that are working today. How do you leverage excess capacity with human beings and tap into that? Turn that into a commodity. One example is Andela. If you know the story of Andela, Andela realized that on the African continent, they can come in, develop a human resource around programmers and computer scientists, and then quote unquote, sell those services to the big companies, like excess capacity of computer brain power. And Andela is a massive company in terms of the valuation it received. Let's take Vuba Vuba. Vuba Vuba has tapped into, they've consolidated and used economies of scale to create a network of delivery men. That's human resource. The bikes, the motorcycles are just a tool, but what are they offering? They're offering each store or each restaurant a delivery person who can deliver goods for them to their customers. And you can see how well they're doing because they're tapping into excess capacity. And that's what I keep trying to tell anybody, if you are to ask me in this context, what are the business models that are making sense? If you want to create a business that's making sense now, that's very lucrative, look at how you can tap into excess human resource. And I genuinely believe that this particular wave is going to continue for, I would say, maybe another 10 years. Now, there's another one that's coming in. That's now the incorporation of technology with this excess human capacity. Now, when you see the influx of artificial intelligence. Now, I'm not going to get into that now. But for me personally, even as if you were to look at my business now, I'm trying to do that. Now, there's something I've not mentioned. When we talk of excess human capacity, it could be the core of your business model, or it could be one of the support services within your business model. Now, there's something called Porter's value chain, if you've ever heard of that. It's like an arrow. I don't know how to describe it. I wish I could draw it. It's like a let's take a rectangle, and then on the edge there's like a triangle, which makes it look like an arrow, right? A block arrow. Now, at the bottom of that, you have different levels. So you have what they call input, you have process, and then you have output, right? Then on top of it, this is within the rectangle, right? On top of those three columns, you have now rows. And each of those rows, you have infrastructure, you have human resource and all of that. These are now support services. And then you have in the triangle, it says after care or after sales care. Now, this structure shows you how value moves within an organization until it reaches the customer, right? From beginning to end. So the input is what do you put in? And then the process is how do you create value? Then the output is how you distribute that value. Then after sales is now how you take care of it. Now on top of these columns, these rows, you have these elements that are forming this what we call support of the process. So infrastructure could be vehicles, distribution channels, computers, technology, and all of that. And then you find the whole idea is that all those things feed into the into that chain below, and they all go towards the output, which is now dealing with the customer and giving them value. Now, that value chain is very key, because once you understand that value chain, you can realize that as long as you leverage excess human capacity in any of those areas, you're going to unlock some value that has not been unlocked by anybody else, right?
I'd like us to bring this first part of the conversation to an end, take a breather, and then return. Of course, there's too much learning. I'm just shocked that you never mentioned anywhere. I wanted you to bring in the example of, for instance, VW, their model with Move.
Mm.
Maybe we can learn about that when we return. There was Yego Moto. I'm not so familiar with their story, but looks like the numbers were not really adding up. Yego Moto and
Yego Cabs.
And Yego Cabs. Mm. Maybe when we return, we could focus on that briefly and see what was the story like. This is Living Entrepreneurship by Salty. Jesse the African Son and Ephraim Romwenge. Stay around. Welcome back to Living Entrepreneurship by Salty. Another great weekend for us to bring to you this conversation. It is a story of entrepreneurship. It's the lessons. It is a class for us. It's a school to learn about business. We have done a few things in business. Yes, we have failed. We have succeeded at a few.
Mm.
And so this is the aspect of our learning that we want to bring together. So maybe you could pick a few things here and there. And that's the essence of just adding to the existing knowledge, isn't it?
Mm.
And so before we went into our break, the model of Vuba, yes, you mentioned that. But I think what we know in Rwanda, for example, we have Yego Moto.
Mm.
Does it seem to work like Uber? Yego Moto, Yego Cab. And I think Move has adopted the same model of working.
I mean, if we're to talk about the fundamental product offering, I'd say it's similar. At least let me talk of Yego Cab and Move, right, by Volkswagen. The fundamental product offering is the same, but the model approach is different. They all differ. Uber differs from Yego Cab. Yego Cab differs from Move, and Move differs from Uber. Like, they're not the same in the sense that, let me make it very clear, right? Uber focuses on independent drivers. So these are individuals with their own cars.
Mm-hmm.
They don't necessarily have to even be cab people. They just plug in and they drive. They get jobs literally on the app. Yego Cab focused on the existing cab driver network,
mm-hmm.
and created a way for them to tap into, like, they just created market linkages. Move, on the other side, said, we are going to be the providers of the entire product value. So in this context, the cars, the drivers, the technology, and so they control the entire product process.
Mm.
So when you think about that, those are completely three different approaches to one problem set.
Mm.
And that's, I think, the beauty of entrepreneurship, right? One entrepreneur that will not see, three entrepreneurs will see the same problem, but three entrepreneurs will come up with three different solutions to that problem. And I think then the market then determines who came up with a better solution,
mm-hmm.
by who they decide to give that money to. And I think, I don't know their numbers. You can never know. These are private companies, so you can never really know which one is more successful than the other. But I mean, the consumers will probably tell you which service is better, right? They know which one of the two or three, wherever they've used them, was probably better, and they will tell you why. But what I'm just trying to say is that when you understand that, that means that there are many ways to skin a cat. 3 times 3 is 9. 9 times 1 is 9. 3 to the power 2 is 9. Square root of 81 is 9. 27 divided by 3 is 9.
Is that much?
So you can always arrive at the same solution in terms of solving a particular problem, but how you arrive at it and the effectiveness of that methodology depends on the context. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, when it comes to models, there are many ways to go about providing business solutions, but there is so much that is involved in determining how you solve those
problems. I don't know when we had this conversation, but maybe in the corridors where we were coming to do this podcast, where you spoke about the power of product. Are we able to skew any solutions in almost similar models, or are the opportunities minimal?
So, man, I'm on a journey, right? And that journey has taught me one simple thing, that learning is an everlasting journey. It's an everlasting activity. You never stop learning. And why do you learn? You're in pursuit. There has to be just that general curiosity, but you're also in pursuit of better. There's that acknowledgement that you just don't know. So you then go seek knowledge from where you think someone knows better, or there's something to learn from. Now, what's interesting about that position is that for me, I've had to really understand what makes businesses great, what makes brands outlive and outlast their competitors, what makes businesses unique. And so there's a book I read called Blue Ocean Strategy, and this book I read a long time ago. And then of late, I've been studying global brands. And let me talk of the global brands, then I talk about Blue Ocean Strategy, because I'm going to use Blue Ocean Strategy to justify what I'm about to say, why it's contextual to Rwanda. Because I'm about to talk about the global brands, and someone's going to be like, nah, but that doesn't apply to Rwanda. So bear with me. We're going step by step. So one of the things that made Steve Jobs one of the most successful product designers of our generation, or even I think in modern history, the quality build of an iPhone, the quality build of a MacBook is still unparalleled. Even when you look at former Apple executives who never worked with Steve Jobs, but have worked in that ecosystem, when they leave and they go create products, yes, the product may not be the most functional, but there's just the way the design and build is quality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you study his thought process at the time, he was so fixated on the narrative that his product told when the customer interacted with it. Same thing applies to even Jeff Bezos, who was selling a service of buying your whatever online, right? An online marketplace. He was so fixated on that experience, because that was the product. The product was the service experience. He was so fixated on how can we make this as efficient, as quick, as affordable as possible. Now, you see all of these things and you realize that these companies grow and become what they are because of product. And guess what happens? The moment they forget about the product and they step away from it, the business starts to collapse. I'll give you a simple example. Elon Musk went and tried to come up with a Cybertruck. He really lost focus with quality of build, because even recently they recalled cars because of sticky pedals. And if you're to find out why, it's really it's about glue. When you're like, what? Like an adhesive, you're like, what? And you see that product quality has disappeared. But before, when he was on the aspect of Tesla and all of that, his fixation was on a quality product, a quality efficient product. Even when I think we've talked about this on this podcast before, about even the story behind SpaceX, the rocket ship thing, it was about quality of product, but with value. Now, again, someone would be like, but how does that apply to me in Rwanda? I'm selling chapati and beans for breakfast in Kisimenti, right? That's where Blue Ocean Strategy comes in. Blue Ocean Strategy says that instead of competing with your competitors on the same things, you need to find a way to change the game. If someone is playing football, change the rules and go play basketball, because automatically you are not competing with that person because the nature of the game you're playing is different. Mm. And it goes on to say that don't fight in red oceans, look for blue oceans. And one of the main ways they say you need to create blue oceans is they have a process of product development, product and service development, that says simplify the business and hammer down on value. So what does that simply mean? Strip the unnecessary elements of the product. Strip it down. Remove things that are not necessary so that it becomes cheaper. And then the things that the customer really, really wants in the product, take that up. And so what ends up happening in the context of Africa, or at least in our markets, right, where we are looking to, we know that the purchasing power of our customer base is really low, where we can't sell a phone for $1,300 or $1,300 and expect us to sell that to many people. The question then comes in is, how can I still be fixated on quality product or service delivery and still do so at a profitable level? Again, simplify, remove the excess. We think the more features a product has, the better it is. Sometimes it's the simplest of products, but where the customer finds value, it supersedes anything else in the market. We think that that's not possible. It is. So again, from a Blue Oceans perspective, and again, my fixation on product, and again, coming back to how to create a good business model. We talked about that input, that process, and that output aspect of Michael Porter's value chain, right? Mm. When you are inputting and processing your product, even by the way, the output, focus on delivering quality of what the customer perceives as value. Everything else, try to simplify so you can reduce cost.
Well, I'd like you to simplify it even further.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if when I ask this question, it helps to simplify. If you would elaborate on a specific element or characteristic of a successful business model, maybe one you have observed, mm-hmm. or maybe one that we have spoken about.
Okay, so do you know the 4 P's of marketing? So a product, price, place, and promotion. Mm. There are some schools of thought that add like 3 more, but to simplify it, let's stick to the 4. So that's product, price, place, and promotion. So product, it's clear. Price, clear. Place is location. And then the last piece, promotion. So there's that aspect of marketing, right? Mm. And brand awareness. Now, all those P's, if I was to rank them. Okay, let me ask you. If you're to rank them, how would you rank them? Between product, price, place, and promotion, what's from the most important to the least important?
I don't know if it would even depend on what kind of product. Mm-hmm. For instance, let's say I was running a restaurant, mm-hmm. restaurant business. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'd think of a strategic placement, mm-hmm. where you are located good. Could mean everything.
But what if your food is bad?
Well, product would come then first.
That's what I'm asking, like in your honest opinion. So you,
I think product comes first. The uh-huh. product must deliver value. Mm-hmm. Should be packaged in a way that's appealing. Mm-hmm. It should also be a solution, that there is an existing problem that your product is solving.
And then number two,
I think the price should be relative to the value that you offer. So price could come in handy.
But if you have a good product and a good price, but people don't know you exist or you're in a bad place, haven't you shot yourself in the foot?
Well, that's why the combination of all these pieces works.
I like the way I'm like pinning you against the wall. Let me tell you an interesting thing, right? You have answered yourself. Mm. It's a mix of everything. There is no one thing that makes a great business a great business. It's a combination of a bunch of good things. Let me give you a simple example. Let's talk of us as human beings. When we talk of a good spouse, a good friend, a good brother, a good sister, a good sibling, a good parent, we're not looking for people who are particularly good at one thing and are completely bad at everything else. We're looking at what we call well-rounded individuals. Mm. Yes, there are those things that matter more based on the values and the environment. Like you just said, for a restaurant, they might be something that's a little bit more important than the next. I'll give you a simple example. Like for real estate, it's about location, location, location. Mm. That one, we all know that. Like, you can make significantly more money if you just focus on one good location, and if you have the resources and you just keep investing in that area, you'll be surprised how much money you make. Even if your product is really, really mediocre, there's a way you will succeed. But again, if your product is really mediocre or even below par, you will never make the kind of money that you would if your product was actually really good. And so when I sit here and I'm talking to an entrepreneur who's listening, my advice would be simple. Focus on all four and hammer it down. Make sure that your product is really good quality. Make sure that your price is competitive, but generate, so there's so much significant value for the customer. Make sure that you are strategically placed. And that means being at the right time at the right place, because luck is you nurture yourself into luck.
Mm.
And then last but not least, promotion. You cannot sell what people don't know exists.
Mm-hmm.
And so you shouldn't be shy to show your business on Instagram. Yeah, people will have comments. But I mean, at the end of the day, all you need is 100 good clients to buy from you. And then they tell their friends and they tell their friends. And before you know it, you're selling 10,000 pieces every day of whatever it is you're trying to sell. Just 100.
We have just about a minute and a half to finish up this conversation. And maybe I should end with a querying on how you define success in the context of a business model. And if there is any specific metrics or indicators that you would consider crucial to measure that, yes, this business model is working. You know, there's some businesses you'd look at and say, these guys, they're really going to work.
They figured it out.
Yeah.
And I think, and what do you think that is? Because I think for me, truth be told, sometimes you can't even pinpoint what it is, but you can just, like, you see.
Mm.
And I think for me, it's when it looks like a dance. There's a fluidity to the work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what sends the signal that this, there's something right that's going on. It's like a well-oiled machine. Mm-hmm. So for me, normally when I go on to say that a business is functioning well, like they have a really good model to what they're doing, there's a fluidity to it. Not necessarily that they are the most, they have the best product in the world, or there's just a fluidity to everything. Like, it all comes together. Kind of like when you see a couple that you know, these ones are going to last. These ones are good for each other. You can see it. You may not know what it is. You can't pinpoint, but it's normally that dance. You can see there's a fluidity to that dance. Even their jokes and their banter, even their arguing, there's a way it looks like it's unison. And I know this sounds poetic, but truth be told, that's the truth. And so if whenever you find yourself in a business, and this is as an entrepreneur, and there's this rigidity and there's this fight and conflict that's happening, and it seems like it's like this robotic movement, there's something you need to change that to get it like this. So what normally happens when something is rigid, what do you add or you subtract? When you have a structure that's not moving, let's say I'm trying to push something and it's what do I add in the middle or do I remove? You normally remove.
Mm.
Because less allows for more freer movement. It frees up space. And that's what I'm saying. Sometimes the best way to make your business model work is to simplify.
I don't know why when you're talking now, I start to think of Rwanda. You know, many times we have commentators say that Rwanda as a country is run like a business.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are out of Rwanda is when you start to hear comments like, there's something your country has gotten right.
Fluidity. There's a simplicity to we have worked hard, and our leaders have put in so much effort. But again, sprezzatura, if you've ever heard of that statement, sprezzatura are these individuals who can make something hard look easy.
Mm.
Like Messi, when he plays football, he makes everybody feel like it.
Makes me feel like I can actually play football.
Exactly. And that's what we call sprezzatura. Sprezzatura are these people who make complex things seem effortless.
Mm.
And that's where now that dance comes in. So Rwanda's development looks almost dance-like. It looks, Rwanda works, you know.
It's coming from a very hard place.
Meanwhile, it's not simple. There's so much work that has gone into it. But from an onlooker's perspective, it's like a beautiful dance. And that's what I'm trying to tell you. Like, that should be the perspective someone has to take when it comes to how you're designing a business model. If you see it's rigid, simplify, remove until you get that fluidity. I know, again, this is poetic, and I don't know if from a living entrepreneurship perspective, it makes sense, but we have tried.
Thank you so much, Ephraim. We have to bring this conversation to an end because we have to be careful. People have data they are running on and they don't want to exhaust it.
I mean, life is good.
But quickly go to our social media handles and find these conversations. You can share them to friends and loved ones.
Most definitely. You can find us on Salty Africa. That's S-A-L-T-E-E Africa. And please do follow, do comment, do share. We want the feedback. Tell us, we really want the feedback. We want to make this, this is about you. That's why it's called Living Entrepreneurship. It's about the lifer.
From us to you and yours, we wish you a fantastic, fantastic time as you explore the very best that you can get out of all of your energies that you bring to the entrepreneurship space. God bless you and bye-bye.